All right, y'all ready to get started? Let's do this. I'm not going to let Wayne introduce me again. That gets awkward fast. I think this is the room I'm supposed to be in because y'all are still here, and many of you were here the first time, so that scares me a little. Either you're gluttons for punishment or you're just hopeful it'll get better over time. It doesn't. It's not the same class, but it's the same person, so your choice in life may want to evaluate your choices in life going forward. So I'm really grateful for all of you to be here, that y'all are here for the second time. I'm going to do something a little bit different this time around. I really want to engage with you guys and see how we might dream aloud a little bit. I actually have a seminar that I do where I travel around and I work with church leaderships and churches on the whole. It's literally just called the Dream Seminar. And the whole point is to teach people how to think differently. Having grown up in Italy, I did not have the same childhood as most other people. I had a weird childhood. I grew up in the 80s. In Italy, which is before the fall of the wall, okay? So I remember the influx of all the people who started coming into Italy as a child. This sounds weird to say this, but part of my job as a kid whenever we went to Rome with my dad was to make sure that the gypsies didn't steal from the Americans who were too stupid to notice they were stealing from them. I used to tackle gypsies for fun. Like, that's what I would do, and I would get money back from them. I had a weird, odd childhood, but it made me view the world differently than a lot of other people do. I've been blessed to travel, and if you've traveled, you just think differently once you've been to someplace different. Have you noticed that? For some of you, it may just be like, you went to Texas, and you were like, I'm glad I'm back in Oklahoma. I'm allowed to say that here, right? In Texas, suddenly there's a lot of people reaching, like, real quick. I lived there for a few years. I learned the hard way. I moved to Tennessee. So being in different places, learning to think differently, my wife has a running joke about me, is that for a lot of people are taught to, they need to be taught how to think outside the box. My wife, Kristen, will always just say, Brandon doesn't know if there is a box. To me, this idea that somehow God has given us the ability to be innovative, to be creative, to think differently is not something we actually encourage in the church. Now, there's a reason for that. It's because innovation in and of itself has been used by Satan to attack doctrine and to attack the church itself, okay? I want to acknowledge the fact that people have misused that which God has given us as a gift to further their own concepts and ideas. What I'm trying to reference is make sure that we don't take away what is a gift from God and miss out on the joys that come from innovation and creativity outside of that which God has set forth. Do we understand? Okay? I feel like I need to say that because it's very easy for us to jump to conclusions, especially with people you might not know. Okay? I'm well aware of that. So I don't want you to take something I'm saying and then run with it and be like, he said we could do whatever. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, what if? And I want you to learn just those two words. What if we did this differently? What if how we reached or how we reached out was different than what we've done before? And those two what if words are very, to me, they're exciting words. A lot of people, it's like they scare them. Anybody here scared by the idea of what if? Because it's usually something like, what if we jumped off a cliff? What if we drove this bus across the world? And some people are like, no, that sounds like a terrible idea. But what if we simply allowed ourselves to widen the parameters of how we reach people with the gospel? That's the question we want to look at, okay? How do we reach people? So in that, and being different, and I've shared with this in the first class, I have embraced my weirdness. I'm okay with it. My wife likes me still, and so I will run with it for the rest of my life. But we're not really good at doing that on the whole in the church. In fact, our constant goal is for everybody to be kind of the same. I say this because I love this because all the preaching schools are here, and I went to Freed Hardeman, and you know my dad has ties to Harding and all the rest. Doesn't it not seem to you guys that we keep trying to produce the same exact preacher? Like an assembly line? And I'm not talking about just the doctrine. Doctrines, yes, but I'm talking about even the way they look and talk. They're all the same guy. And I've joked about that for years, and I thought it was funny, and then it just got kind of sad because it got to be really real. Because I'd go and hear one guy and be like, I heard that exact same sermon almost word to word to this guy a couple weeks ago. And my first thought was like, okay, they're plagiarizing. They're watching each other on Facebook or something. What's happening? And then I realized, no, they both studied under the same guy at the same school. and we become the exact same thing that we produce consistently. If you think back to Matthew and when he specifically talks about, and this is one of my favorite, when he says the children are coming and he said, let the little children come to me, right? And this is where we jump and paraphrase almost instantly because he said, unless you become like one of these children, you will not what? Enter the kingdom of heaven. What do we ascribe to those children instantly? What do we always say God's referring to there? Innocence. I love that. Have you met children? Is innocence truly the thing that you're thinking that he was talking about in that moment? I'm sounds facetious, but I'm telling you, I think we're selling ourselves short if we think that that's what God was intending. What Jesus was intending in that morning was just innocence. I think it's more than that. Children are not afraid. They're fearless in the way they view the world. Children are not afraid to make a new friend, to reach out, to try something new, to fall down, to get up, to get hurt, get up and do it again. Children are fearless in their creativity. They have to be taught to fear things. Otherwise, I have a three-year-old son named Duncan, and we were just at PTP, and he's running around, and suddenly I get a text that says, and Duncan's a tough kid. They're like, he's not stopped crying for the last 30 minutes. And I'm like, that's weird. So I go there and I walk in and I pick him up and he's kind of still crying. And then all of a sudden he just reaches over and grabs his arm and he holds his arm. And I said, are you okay? And he goes, my arm hurts. I said, well, did you tell the teacher? No. I was like, well, why not? No. So we took him to prime care and they're like, he's got a deep bone bruise. He didn't break anything, deep bone bruise on his arm. But within 20 minutes, he was back up playing again. Running around, and then he fell, went straight on his arms, and he goes, ah, I remember that. And then he kept running. And eventually he'll learn that hurts. But it didn't stop him from playing and having fun and doing the things that you would do naturally. The problem with us as growing up is that we've lost the innocence and the joy of creativity, of innovation, of fearlessness in the church. We've become so afraid of all the things that could go wrong that we no longer try to do anything unless we know we're going to be successful. We do not do anything unless we know we're going to be successful. And it's our greatest downfall. I've sat in far too many meetings, and I'm not just going to throw elders under the bus. I'm talking about with members and everybody, where the things we always say is, yes, but... And I used to joke about the fact that if you ever want to kill an idea, take it to a meeting. Because that's where ideas go to die. Just take it to a meeting, it will die there. But I'm going to do a little exercise with you guys, and we're going to talk about what if. What if we did something? And here's how I know to do this. Every one of you, deep inside of you, has within you the ability to be unbelievably creative and innovative. Now, just as a show of hands, how many of you would naturally say, I'm a creative person? I love this. There's like 10 of you, and that's pretty much the consistent norm until I do what we're about to do, okay? So a good friend of ours that we get to work with at times, Don Hahn and others from Disney and Pixar that we get a chance to work with once a year at the Story Conference. I love getting to work with them. I walked in one day in a room, and it was Don Hahn from Disney. I want to say it was Matthew Lund from Pixar, and then Jim Kruger from Marvel, and they were all sitting there, and they were playing this game that's called the Writer's Room, and it's not really a game, it's a real life for them. Steve Feldman from Sesame Street. So they were in there, and they were just throwing out random things, and then just asking the question, what if, over and over again, creating a story on the fly. So we're going to work on doing this together real quick. I need somebody to give me a name of a person, historical, ancient, near time, modern, whatever, just anything. Colonel Sanders, sweet. Okay, now I need you to give me a time period in history. Anything. 1820, Colonel Sanders. Okay, now I need a thing. Okay.
Winks.
Wings.
Wings.
Ooh, we got wings, Colonel Sanders. Ooh. Okay, 1820, okay? Now I need a genre, a type of feel, something like that.
Comedy.
Comedy, sweet. Okay, so you're gonna play along with me. I want you to constantly think, what if, what if, what if, what if, what if. Okay, so what if Colonel Sanders were in 1820, okay? So Colonel Sanders is into 1820. It kind of seems like that's the time period he lived in some ways, isn't it? I don't know when he actually lived, but we're making the film about Colonel Sanders in the 1820s. So this is pre-Civil War. So this is still slavery-built America. Maybe Colonel Sanders is the reason we no longer have slavery in America. What if that's the truth? What if he started a restaurant, KFC, in 1820 in Kentucky? And what if he was known for his wings? What if that's what he was known for, the wings specifically? And what if he got all the recipes from the African slaves? What if that was his way of getting them out, was that they could come and work for him and then he would be able to actually free them? What if he was part of the Underground Railroad? What if Colonel Sanders was part of the Underground Railroad, but the comedy aspect of it is how can we make it a comic? What if? What would happen in that scenario?
He burns the wings.
What if he burns the wings every time? Maybe what if burning the wings is a signal that somebody's there in the restaurant that's there to capture one of the slaves? So what if different sauces meant different things to the people that were there? Okay, let's bring in some other characters. We need a love story here. Look, give me somebody that he could fall in love with. Who's he fall in love with?
Pocahontas.
Yes. Okay. So, Pocahontas from the 1600s. Okay, so we need a time machine. What if this is an episode also? Man, what if Doctor Who showed up? So Doctor Who shows up, transport Pocahontas to meet him because they need, why do they need her? Is she falling in love with one of the, maybe it's one of the slaves, or what if it's Colonel Sanders himself? Who's it going to be?
John Smith wants chicken for his birthday.
John Smith wants chickens for his birthday. Okay, so they've come back in time to get that, but then she finds out what it all is happening. Maybe she orders the wrong thing, and maybe a set of events kick off because she orders something that John Smith wants back in time. Now they're coming forward, and suddenly there's a whole entire issue, and the Civil War kicks off because of that. What if that's what happens? So everything you just experienced here, does this not sound like a film you kind of want to see now? I just want to know what happens. The what if kind of philosophy and mentality changes how you view everything. The problem with us within the church often is we don't dream enough. We don't think aloud enough. We don't talk. We don't get together just to say, what is it that we could do? We're far too practical. Because here's the thing. We only do the things that we know we can succeed at, which oftentimes means we don't need God. Because we can do them without Him. I'm a big believer that we should have dreams so large that the only way we will ever succeed is if God is part of them. So for example, I'll give you one of the Nashville Church of Christ ones. We're going to plant 100 churches in 100 cities in the next 25 years. That's literally our goal right now. Why? Because why not? And let's say, what if we fail miserably and plant only 60 churches? What horrible failures we've been. But what if God actually had bigger plans? Because what if those churches we plant actually end up planting other churches, so instead of 100, there's 200? What if God has bigger plans even beyond that? You see, when we take ideas to meetings, that's where they go to die. Instead of staying there and to just dream out loud, imagine a moment where you can get together with your church family and you simply say, what about our city? What if we thought differently? What if we saw social media as a good thing? We know the evils of it. We know the things that can happen. In fact, what if we looked at the evils of what's happening on there and we provided solutions to those evils? What if we became a place of peace and rest for people online? What if everything we posted was simply positive and uplifting? What if we weren't constantly going after everybody's denominational issues and instead focus solely on the things that Christ, the gospel, online? And then when they come and meet us, we can teach. That's where we teach. But online, we provide hope. What if we change the way we view things? What if we provide a place of rest in a city that's constantly in turmoil? And I don't know if you've been part of our culture recently, but it's not very friendly. In fact, there seems to be an animosity and a craziness that seems to be perpetuated, and we are in a culture of victims. Everybody's a victim. Easily easily triggered. I love that word. Easily triggered. I met a guy the other day, no kidding, who told me he was triggered by the world, by the word triggered, and he could not come to grasp with how he could say he was, how he was feeling, because if he said the word or thought the word, it triggered him. And I know what my first thought was, oh, wow. But my second one was, man, I hurt for that person. They can't even think about words without going into a meltdown. What a way to live. To provide a place of peace and rest. So how can we use technology? What if we were to spend some time just dreaming aloud? Did you know that I could probably set you guys up even this evening online with about 50 to 100 underground churches where you could teach through a secret app, teach online Bible to Christians meeting in underground churches right now in China that they would then re-preach and teach on Sunday to their churches across all of China. Did you know that even existed? Why not? You have the ability to think it. Why don't you have the ability to find out if it's there? Or to create it if it's not there? I will tell you this, it does exist already, so you don't have to create that one. But you can create other things. How many of you have ever received messages from people from India or Africa or the rest on Facebook? How many of you have been asking for money? Almost all of them, right? This is my favorite thing to do. I write back and I go, I am so excited about your work. Tell me more about you. Do you know what I get? Pages of stuff. And then I get down to the end of that and I read through and I'm just like, that's amazing. How can I pray for you today? What's going on in your life that I can pray about? They have been taught that Americans only have money. But I want to get to the real value of a relationship is, which is me and them. Anybody ever had a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon knock on their door? What's our typical reaction? Shut the door, right? Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. You have two people, because they're typically in twos, walk up to your door and say, I want to study the Bible. And our first reaction is, I don't have time for this. I just want you to stop and think. Instead, what I like to do is send mail to the Mormon church or the tabernacle or the temple and say, here's my address. You are welcome anytime. They don't come much anymore. But they still do. They used to come just about every other day. But because they're looking for the same thing we're looking for, right? If we're honest, that they're looking for truth. They're looking for what is real. But they may have been misled. So how can we use even the things that are in our world and just think differently about it? To think and dream out loud. So let me ask this. What time am I supposed to end? Do y'all know? 3:30, is it? Sweet. We got plenty of time. So I want to do this. We're literally going to just dream out loud a little bit. What is a problem that you see in the church today? I'm going to invite you into a dream session here, okay? You got a problem? All right, let's hear a problem.
Mm-hmm. About this.
Oh, sweet. We're going into the deep end fast. And from the mouth of babes, y'all. That's amazing. Y'all don't understand. Okay, you're getting a high five for that one. Sweet. Okay, so I don't know who her mom is, but she may be getting talked to on Sunday. I love it. This is amazing. This is my favorite moment ever today. So, unqualified elders is absolutely an issue we have. We were talking about just even at lunch today, I asked the question, my dad always said, you know a qualified elder when it's a person that when you have a question, you instantly turn, I want to talk to that person. Now that may seem like a weird thing, but he said, but ultimately what qualification of elders is about wisdom. That there is counsel there. That there is peace there. That there are answers there. There is age there. Now, I'm not talking about just older. I'm talking about there is life that has been spent there. I'm a big believer in lifting up elderships because I've seen them beaten down quite a bit. But I will absolutely tell you, we have people who are sitting within the title elder who never have been qualified within the concepts of what Scripture actually teaches. I don't think that's going to shock anybody. So how do we, thinking outside the box, how do we encourage the situations that might already exist where you have people who are unqualified sitting in those roles with the title, but not the actual experience or role that needs to be fulfilled? Anybody here ever done, actually been out in a, like a farm where you're a shepherd or saw shepherds? Awesome. Yeah, because we live in America, right? Now, we're a little bit more in the heartland here, so I was expecting a couple of you guys, but apparently none of y'all. Growing up in Italy, I had a sheepdog. Now, Heidi was half German shepherd, half wolf. And then we had Cucciolo, which meant little puppy. And little puppy was about 150 pounds, and she was a white sheepdog. These sheepdogs were, both of them, were there not to keep the sheep away. They were to keep the wild boar away. We had wild boar that would come down from Tuscany through the hills in packs of 20 or 30. Their job was to scare them away. We have a lot of elders who seem to be operated in the same way. They're sheepdogs by title, but they actually seem to be doing a whole lot of scaring away the scary things outside of the church that actually have nothing to do with what their role is within the actual church. You see, I'm a big believer that elders should be elders. Now, this is a weird thing. Preachers far too often fulfill the role of elders. Elders seem to be doing the job of deacons. Deacons seem to be doing the job of members, and members aren't doing anything. If everybody would just slide down one. And then you ask, well, where are preachers going? Well, here's, yeah, this is a great one. I'm a big believer that preachers are actually supposed to be evangelists, because preachers are not actually preachers, they're teachers. Because most of their work typically has been within the congregation. They're teachers. Evangelist is what you see. Evangelist is a role we're missing, where they spend most of their time talking to people about the gospel outside the church, not just solely from a pulpit. It's why people ask me all the time, are you a preacher? And I'm like, absolutely, but I'm actually more of an evangelist. Well, do you preach at a church? No, I don't. I teach and I travel and I go around and I do a lot of things because I spend a lot of time with people who are not Christians. If you spend more time with who are Christians, it's hard to be called an evangelist when most of your time is spent with people who are Christians. If predominant amount of time is with those who are lost, you're an evangelist. Otherwise, you're a teacher. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. Scripture calls for us to have teachers, right? In fact, it actually says not everyone should be a teacher. Why? Because you're going to be held accountable for what you teach. Teach the gospel is one thing. Teaching to the members is another. It's a very different audience, and we have to realize that. If we had more evangelists, because more elders were able to step in and to be true shepherds. There's an old book title that I love. It's Shepherds Should Smell Like Sheep. And far too many just don't. And sheep are no good if they're only in the barn. And right now, a lot of our sheep just sit in the barn. So how can we think out loud? How can we help elders? How can we help those who are unqualified to become qualified? Because that's a question too, isn't it not? Offering opportunities for shepherds to grow. And here's where I would also add, shepherds need shepherds. They must shepherd each other constantly. And if you know you have a man who's not qualified, I don't care how long he's been called elder, it is on the elders who are those in real life to step in and say, brother, it's time for you to step down or to step up. It's one or the other, but continuing this way cannot go. And I will throw in my own two cents on this. Shepherds need to truly hold each other to a higher standard. It's very easy to protect one shepherd or another, even when they're wrong, just because you want to be united. But if they're wrong, it needs to be said they're wrong, to hold each other accountable. Doesn't mean that you have to tell the whole entire congregation to make a big spectacle out of it. But it's helpful if a congregation knows that everyone's being held accountable, no matter what your history is or what your role is within the church, that you're loved enough to be rebuked, even if it's in private. Those things need to happen far more than they are currently, because it's very easy for elders to run riot. And I very rarely hear of elders actually being called out for lording over. Anybody? You just don't hear it very often. Members talk about it, but very rarely is that an actual thing that seems to be talked about very often. So, anyways, we went into the deep end of the pool very quickly. What else? What are other issues or problems? Maybe even cultural problems. That's part of what this conversation is. What cultural problems do you see within our world today that you'd like to just think out loud upon? What do you have? Yes, sir.
I'm from a major metropolitan area.
Okay.
Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
Texas. Yeah, there is a tremendous division among races.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We need desperately to cross the racial barrier line to bring other brothers in, because it doesn't make any difference what color.
Yeah.
Satan's after all. And if he can conquer and divide us, he's already got us.
Yes. Absolutely. So I'm glad you brought that up. So it's a weird thing to say for myself personally. I have two younger brothers who are both African-American. We're both biracial. I'd never truly experienced it until I saw it firsthand with my own physical brothers. I remember walking into Walmart, believe it or not, even in Searcy, Arkansas, when we were there at Harding with my two younger brothers, and I literally heard a lady go, "Well, I wonder who he knocked up." Then I saw her at church on Sunday. Okay? I was 15. These kids were obviously not my children. But for whatever reason, that's the mentality that still happens. So here's, I actually spoke on this up in Washington State a couple weeks ago. We have got to stop honoring foolishness in this country and in the church. I do not wish to speak of the fools that we have within our congregations, because they do exist. And to not acknowledge them is dangerous. They absolutely exist. I've experienced it firsthand. But I will not elevate their foolish arguments. There is no such thing as white churches and black churches. There is the church. In the same way that somebody once asked me, because I grew up in Italy, I learned English later on when I was 14. And with that in mind, words tend to speak differently to me than they speak to others, because they come to me from a different perspective. So when we even say things like, what's a good word? Traditional marriage. Okay, when we use that terminology, what does it imply? That there's another kind. That there's a non-traditional marriage. If I were to put you in a room through one door and say, go out the other door, it tells you what? There's two doors. Even the terminologies we use matter. Now, the reality is there are black churches and there are white churches. But from a spiritual perspective, there's not. There's the church. Now, we have some cultural issues that we've got to get through. We have some historical issues we have to get through. Because historically, in the United States, there is a massive divide, whether we individually have ever had anything to do with it personally. Historically, we do. Whether you're white, whether whatever, I don't care. In fact, this whole concept of race in general tires me. But I don't want to be so naive as to think it doesn't affect my brothers and sisters in Christ around the globe and around where I'm at. So how do we do something about it? I'm asking you.
Stop waiting for the other side. Step up and do it.
Huh. Yes. What if, instead of, because we do have some cultural differences in our worship, don't we? Now, they would still, by the way, I don't know if y'all know this, but traditionally African-American black churches in the Churches of Christ are far more conservative than even some of ours. Far more conservative. But they're far more interactive in their worship. Now, I'm not saying instrumental music, I'm not saying anything else, but I'm saying far more interactive. I took a group of teenagers up to inner city Chicago a few years back. I had one kid who'd pretty much never been out of the state of Alabama. And we got there, and there's a lot of give or take going on between the service, talking back and forth with the guy preaching. No kidding, I looked at him and he's going. I said, "Are you okay?" And he goes, "But he won't stop talking. How am I supposed to pay attention? He won't." And he's looking at me, he's getting physically angry. And so I finally just said, "It's just different. You need to use the word different. It's not bad. It's not evil. It's not wrong. It's different. He goes, well, it's really different. Yes. So what if we were the first ones, not wanting to say necessarily the first ones to reach out, because I would also say there's a lot of people been screaming for a long time, pay attention. So to say that we're the first ones might be a dangerous starting point in of itself, wouldn't it? But what if we simply said, we just like to get together and maybe meet in our homes. I'll tell you where the biggest, one of the key things where we've lost is we've lost our hospitality. I've loved, every time I go and travel someplace, I always ask, is there somebody's home I can stay in? Because I learn more about people just being able to stay with them in a few days than staying in a hotel and then spending time speaking in a conference will ever teach me about that group of people. The lost art of hospitality. Before you ever drag the churches in, church leadership, they got to see it in real life. And I say they, I'm talking about anybody that you've not interacted with. And that may not just include people that are African American or the rest. It may just be people who are lost in the world that you don't interact with, that you don't invite into your home. Every Monday night, we've had a Bible study at our home for years when I was in youth ministry, and it was always the most well-attended thing we had. We would average 45 to 50 teenagers every Monday night. 3/4 of them had no ties to any church. But when the bad things happened in life, guess who showed up at 11 o'clock at night at my house, even if it was a Thursday or Friday? A girl finds out she's pregnant. She's not going to mom or dad or somebody else. Whose house is she showing up at? Mine, because she wants to talk to my wife. Why? Because they sat in the kitchen and baked cookies one day and she'd never been taught how to cook. Basic, everyday hospitality. So you want to know how we stop some of these things? And this is just my perspective. What if we just go back to hospitality and started inviting people into our homes on a daily basis? Forget our churches. Let's change our lives first. And you don't think that's not going to spill over into our churches? Because eventually they're going to go, man, I'm over at your house almost every other week. Why in the world don't we? Why don't you come worship with me? I'd love to come worship with you. I'd love for you to come worship with us. But we have to know that we care from the very humanity of us. Because it's one thing to invite them into a church building. It's another when you invite them into your home. That's a whole other ballgame. That would be what I would recommend. That would be where I would start off. Because what if, and that sounds like a very non-traditional thing to think, say out loud, but it is unbelievably biblical, isn't it? How about the church in Acts? My favorite is the church over there. Do y'all know the name of it? Which one mentions like 4 or 5 different groups of people just in the names of the leaders? Church of Antioch. What does it say? It says, it mentions them. Who are they? It says Simon from where? Also called Niger, which probably meant he was from where? Africa. And then you had a few others, right? One, it said he was a friend of Herod the Tetrarch, which means he was probably high society. And then you had a couple other that it mentions that were from that area. You had people from that whole church in Antioch is one of the reasons why they were very evangelistic. They had people from all over the world. If you want to visit a neat church, by the way, the Glyphada Church of Christ outside of Athens, Greece. Anybody ever heard of it? They have worship service in 8 languages every Sunday. They baptized over 600 Muslims in the past 4 years. They have, it's in Bulgarian, Greek, English, Farsi, Arabic. There's a few other ones that are in there, and Greek, obviously. Russian, and then also some Ukrainian, too. So they have people, 7 different worship services during the day, and at 8 o'clock, they all come back for or 6 o'clock in the evening, they all come back for the English service altogether, just to worship together. It exists. But the one thing they never talk about is they're not different. They're not 6 different churches. They're one church. They just speak different languages. We're one church. We believe in that, right? One church, one faith. So we have to practice it first before we can actually ever say anything about it. So what else you got? We got a few more minutes. What else would you like to dream about? Man, y'all, we're scraping the bottom of a pool here at the bottom. But I love it. This is exactly what I'm talking about. What if we tried something differently? What if? What other issues or problems do you might see come up within the church or even within our culture that you think is something we might want to learn how to face?
25% doing 75%
work. Oh, yeah. Yes. All right, so what would you do with that? How has it gone for us to make fun of people or to just encourage people? Has that worked out well for us? No. So maybe we ought to try something different. Because
what if you just gave them something to do?
Okay.
What if we take people along with
us? Okay. So invitation matters. So y'all heard, some of y'all may have heard Wayne earlier about the concept of invitation. Can I give y'all a real life example of invitation versus what I call information? So this is not original to me, but I'm going to use you as an example. So Jacob, there's a restaurant in Florence, Italy called Gallo's. It's one of the best restaurants in the world. July 4th of next year, I'll be there. You're going to be there on July 4th at 11 p.m. at night. That's when you eat, by the way, in Italy. It's a beautiful thing. 11 p.m. at night, we're going to go there. It's got the best seafood and pizza in the world. I'm going to take you. I'm going to buy you. If you'll be there, I'll buy you dinner, okay? 11 p.m. on July 4th, okay? All right, what's your name?
Alex.
Okay, Alex, there is a place in Henderson, Tennessee called Bell's Burgers. It's the best burger in the world. It's been voted the best in Tennessee 12 years in a row. It's one of the places where you walk in and you feel your arteries clogging instantly. Okay? It's phenomenal. If you'll meet me there, we're going to go sometime, okay? And I'll buy you all the burgers you want. It's phenomenal, okay? All right, so when are we going?
July 4th, 11 o'clock.
When are we going?
Don't know.
Okay? So this was invitation. This was information. Now, let me translate this. Next Sunday, we actually have some Sundays coming up and everything where we've got this big thing going on, and we'd love for you to come. Would you mind going to church with us maybe sometime? Awesome. Okay, so I'll reach out to you. We'll get together. We'll find out a time, okay? Does that work for you? Great. Hey, this next Sunday, we've got this incredible speaker that's coming in. It's going to be great. Can I pick you up for breakfast at 8, and then we can go to worship together? Okay, what's the difference? One is a specific invitation to a specific time and event. The other one is what I believe 95% of us do on a consistent basis. We give the same information they can find out on a website, but we do not give actual invitation. When you don't actually speak through the words that you think you're doing something different than what you're actually doing. Now, here's where I would throw us into the deep end here. The 75% or the 25% that are doing a lot of the work, even some of the eldership and the leadership within the congregations, if you don't see the elders doing the work that the members are being asked, it's really hard to stand in front of them and tell them you're not doing something. That 80-20 rule I have found drastically disappears when the eldership practices what they're preaching on a consistent basis. At a church a few years ago where I simply asked the elders, I said, you keep wanting us to invite people, but they've never seen you bring anybody. And it was a gut shot for a lot of them, and it was a gut shot for me too, because as a minister, I had to stop and go, when's the last time I brought somebody? I mean, I talk to people all the time. I'm constantly busy with spiritual things. I study and read lessons and do all this stuff, right? But maybe there's something to me doing the same thing I'm asking them to do myself. So I remember the Sunday when I saw four of the elders, and there was a whole row of people with them. And I'm telling you, there was a lot of people that Sunday who noticed. Because they were like, well, that's Greg. Greg works with him works with the elder at his job. So suddenly they were making connections to where this stuff. So then when somebody says, hey, we would really encourage you and invite your friends. Invite your coworkers. There was action speaking there, not just words. So the 80-20 rule, the problem is so often is when we have these jobs, and I go back to where everybody kind of needs to move down a role, is because we expect somebody else to do it. That's also part of the problem. We expect everybody else to do it. Let it fail. Tell the people who normally do it to not show up. Watch what happens. Plus, I dare tell you that your job is not success in everything. It's faithfulness. And sometimes you have to let some things fail so that you can see them succeed, so that people will become embarrassed by what happens. The long run is always better than short-term success. Always. I've only seen one church do that where they let it fail. Do you know how much embarrassment they had when the elders meeting they had the next week? And some of the members were very upset that their children did not suddenly have, it was for like a children's Mother's Day out, and they could not get anybody to come and help watch the kids. So they went and yelled at the youth minister because the teenagers couldn't help, and he was like, I was told not to bring them. I was told that other people needed to volunteer. and all the people who couldn't. So nobody came to watch the kids, and so people were coming to the door, and they were saying, I'm sorry, we just can't help you. We don't have any volunteers. And guess what? All the people who came and were trying to drop off the kids were the very ones who never did anything. Or they had no ties. That elders meeting, I remember hearing about this after the fact, because I gave them the advice, and I was kind of interested to see what was going to happen. They said that they sat with those elders, and they said, we needed to give a day off to the people who've been doing all the work. And they stood by it. I'm telling you, the next time around, there was a whole lot more volunteers because those members were embarrassed. They were embarrassed by what had just happened. And sometimes that tough love needs to happen. Elders, you got to get tough sometimes. And not just when things are going wrong. We can't just be reactionary. We need to be visionary. We need to foresee things that could go wrong and foresee things that could go right and push towards those things. So what else do you have? We've got just a couple more minutes left.
Divorce.
Yes. What if... Well, this kind of goes into a deeper aspect of it. I'll be honest with you on that. What if it was okay to fall down as long as you were willing to get back up? What if the church... Like, I don't know about you guys, but... This may sound weird. I don't offer invitations. Now, you may ask why. It's because when I preach the gospel, that's one thing. Typically, when I'm speaking in a church, it's to 99% of the saved. And the people who are going to be coming forward were already planning on coming forward to begin with before. Very rarely have I found that to be the case, especially with like even a three-minute Devo on a Wednesday night that somebody didn't already have plans to come forward that night because of something in their life. So instead, what I often do is tell people, there will be elders standing at the back. If you need to just talk with somebody, if you have sin in your life that you want to share, go and talk with the leaders of the church. Because you know what it also does is it takes it, it's not about me. It's not about the preacher standing up front. It's not about those things. It goes back to the biblical role of wisdom being within the eldership. That's where you're going to find comfort and peace in those things, not on me. But we have a bad habit within our invitation system of two things. One, we actually think that the only time you can ever repent is on a Sunday morning or a Sunday night. And that is a terrible practice to have. Horrendous practice to have. Because then people, instead of coming forward, will just not come. They'll stop coming to church altogether. Then on the other side, when you don't offer it, We don't have an alternative. People don't know when it's okay to repent. People just assume Sundays is the only day you can do anything spiritual. Maybe Wednesday nights at 7 p.m., right? But outside of that, or are y'all 6:30? What are y'all around here? Seven? Only if the class is in the auditorium. You see, we may even have some practices and things in general where people who are struggling with real life situations do not know where to turn or how to turn without feeling like they're either going to have to walk in front of everybody and share it openly in the moment. And I would just open this. How many of you would be willing to do that even about the smallest thing you've done wrong in life? Forget the things that are life-altering like divorce. Life-altering like sexual sin or sexual immorality or impurity in your life or pornography and the rest. Because don't think for a second we don't all jump to conclusions the moment we see somebody going forward. So what if we change that? What if... I love that we celebrate baptisms with everybody, the whole church. What if that's the only time people went forward? What if sins in the real life were actually there to be shared privately, and if they needed to be shared publicly, then the elders, through support and wisdom, were there to stand beside them instead of standing alone by themselves? What if we just thought differently? What if we had set up for single moms, single dads, where the church knew that, hey, it's going to be okay if you're not okay to be here. It's one of my favorite statements from a church down in the Dallas area, believe it or not. It was, it's okay to not be okay. It's not okay to stay that way. I just love that. You see what? It acknowledges that there are people who are going to be in pain. And we're going to be a church who deals with pain. But we're not going to let people stay in pain. Instead, we're going to grow towards that. And if you're an eldership or a church that doesn't have a plan for people who are in different lifestyles, welcome to a couple lawsuits, by the way, if you don't have a plan for that. if you don't have a plan for how you handle and encourage people who are in multiple divorces, multiple marriages, whatever may come, you're going to cause yourself problems and heartaches in the long run if you don't already know what you're going to do before those moments happen. Think ahead. You know our culture. It's messed up. It's backwards. But you have to have a plan. And that plan needs to be bathed in love. It needs to be spoken in grace and mercy. And it needs to be shown with the beauty of what the Scripture says on this is right and this is wrong. But we will support you in everything if you will walk the path of God. If you will lay that before them. How we say, what we say, and how we do what we do absolutely matters. Now imagine if you were to share that mentality through your social media. Imagine if you were to use the words God has given to us, not to condemn, but to invite. The world is already condemned. It stands condemned. Now many may not know that, but they'll find out when the world shows you the truth, because then they'll look at the world and go, well, that's not how I live, but that looks better. One of my favorite statements is actually, again, one from C.S. Lewis, and even A.W. Tozer specifically speaks of, you never have to convince prostitutes that there's a better life out there, but you do have to convince the people that are asleep. So how do you do that? You engage the culture where they're at. You step into the fray. And you step in as a warrior. At lunch, in my last comment here, at lunch we were talking about some names of things. We have a room at our church building that we're renovating right now that we literally call the war room. It's our elders' room. When they go in there, they are at war council, because Satan is coming after us with everything he's got. They are in there to make strategies and plan to how they protect their people, how they protect the kingdom of God, and how they take the fight to the enemy, because we don't sit back and let the enemy attack us. We are not in siege mentality. We are at war. We've already won the war, but there are people still fighting the battle. So how do we help them? And if you can't do that, if you don't have a plan, if you don't know how you're going to reach out with all those things. I wish I had more time. I feel like we could do this all day. Please reach out to me if I can help you in any way. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, through Agos and the rest. I always say this in every class. I didn't get to it at the end of the last one. I need y'all to know this. I love every one of you. And my hope is that whether this is the last time we ever see you or not, my hope is we'll spend eternity together. That's my goal. But we're at war. And I need all of us to remember that, because some of us are putting on cardboard armor every day. And some of us are not equipping our churches for the fight. And some of us don't realize that there's tools available for us out there where we can reach the whole entire world through technology, through media, through social media, and the rest. If you want to see what we're doing, I'll send you some of the notes that I have for some of the deeper depths and dives of technological understanding, how you can use social media, how you can use video and working with us. If you guys want to come and help us out, y'all mentioned already the story conference. If you guys want to come help, you realize I'm over all the volunteers. You can come volunteer and come spend 2 days with us in Nashville and hang out with us and serve all the people behind the stage. I'm serious about that. We can make that happen. Please let me know how I can help you guys. I love you all. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.